Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You're listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast. Before we start the show, I wanted to share a little clip from today's episode. I interviewed, it was an amazing interview with a guy named Gautam Baid, who is a CFA portfolio manager. Guy is wise. So he wrote a book called The Joy of Compounding. And later in the interview, it was more just a back and forth dialogue conversation. He talked about why the Berkshire Hathaway meeting is so valuable for people. It's always been something for me that's really, really hard to explain to someone who's never been there. And Gautam Baid was able to share that magic much more eloquently than I've ever been able to do. So I wanted to just play a clip from that part of the episode that comes much later at the beginning. And then after that, we'll start the show.
That's very true. In fact, you know, I've talked about this in the chapter on the importance of having the right associates in life. So Sanjim, just to add to your point about the impact which a Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting has on us value investors, I'll just sum it up in one single line. You get to experience a gravitational pull towards higher qualities. I mean, you know, Warren Buffett has famously said, hang out and interact with people better than you and you cannot improve. And that is what you get to experience every year at the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting. I mean, so many smart, intelligent, wise people, just being in their presence has an incredible impact on, the truly curious and humble person. I mean, you just want to imbibe all those good qualities as much as you can, just take up all the good qualities that you can from all those wise people. That's what I love most about this annual meeting. Yeah. And you'll also notice one more thing. Most of those, in fact, majority, if not all of them, are so humble and so helpful. I mean, they have been greatly beneficial in my life. Greatly, greatly beneficial. And those relationships, they really tend to endure for a long period of time. And it's not about money. It's just about, being in the company of good people. That's it.
Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett, here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein. You are listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast. Today we have Gautam Baid on. He is a CFA portfolio manager at Summit Global Investments and SEC registered investment advisor based out of Salt Lake City, Utah. Previously served at the Mumbai, London, and Hong Kong offices of both Citigroup and Deutsche Bank as senior analyst in their healthcare investment banking teams. Is a CFA charter holder, member of the CFA Institute. Got an MBA in finance from, I don't know how to pronounce this. Is it Nirma University? How do you say that?
Yes, Eric, that's correct.
Oh, good. Nirma University in India and an MS in finance from ICFAI University in India. Strong believer in the virtues of compounding, good karma, and lifelong learning. Welcome to the show. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks, Eric. Thank you for having me.
So now, word on the street is you just wrote a book.
Yes, that's correct. Right. It's called The Joys of Compounding.
So tell us a little bit about what the book's about. What had you want to write it? Just give us a little background on this.
So in its true essence, The Joys of Compounding is my heartfelt tribute to all my teachers who helped me achieve financial independence, become a better and wiser person, and embark on the path to a meaningful and fulfilling life. And writing this book is, more my way of giving back to the investing community. That's why I decided not to charge any royalty or fee from the sale of this book. I'm just selling this at the minimum permissible price for the paperback on Amazon and other mediums like Book Depository, Books A Million, IndieBound, and other mediums. So, I've gotten to learn a lot from the investing community over the years, and I hope they find reading this book helpful.
As I'm aware, you're with pre-order sales. You're not doing too shabby, are you?
It's gotten a pretty good response. I'm very humbled by the response so far. It's pretty heartening. Yes.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. So, tell us a little bit about for someone who might be interested in reading the book. Tell us a little bit about what the book's about.
So essentially, the book you know, covers all the key life lessons and the investment principles that power the compounding journey of a value investor. You know, the very beginning, the first chapter of the book is, you know, which kicks off the proceedings, is titled "The Best Investment You Can Make Is an Investment in Yourself," and it talks about, you know, the importance of continuous daily self-improvement, which is the best investment you can make. And if you just, you know, keep on learning every single day, if you just engage in constant learning, constant improvement every single day, one step, one small step at a time, eventually it starts bearing great, great results. And this value investing field is so vast and so deep. I mean, there are so many intriguing topics which are worth discussing about. And essentially what I've done is I've compressed all the biggest learnings of my 35 years into one single book. That is essentially what the book has done. So, you know, apart from the core investing lessons, there is a lot of talk about the various life principles as well. For example, there is, you know, talks about, you know, embracing simplicity, being humble,
so, you know, engaging constantly. So let's go with that. Embracing simplicity. How does that apply, you know, to the theme of the joys of compounding and value investing? Explain, because I think your book's interesting because it's not just a straight up, you know, finance or business book. And I think you incorporating a lot of the different kinds of philosophy and wisdom behind it makes the book actually quite unique. So explain, you know, embracing simplicity, how that ties into the larger picture of investing.
Correct. So basically, you know, one of the earlier chapters before simplicity talks about the power of focus. And in the chapter on simplicity, I've talked about embracing simplicity as a way of life. And there is a section on minimalism. So minimalism is basically not about having the minimum number of things in your life. It's about having the optimum number of things in your life. It's about basically decluttering your life away from all the excesses which you may have. So if you have, you know, too many excess insurance policy or insurance products or a lot of, you know, piled up defunct stuff on your desk or at home, you're just clearing away all the clutter from your life to bring in focus. And focus is the key to success. You know, you look at most of the successful people in the world, they have embraced the power of focus. In fact, there is a specific chapter on that particular topic. It's titled Harnessing the Power of Passion and Focus through one of the big ideas from the field of behavioral science, which is a deliberate practice. So all these, you know, each of the chapter builds on one another. And, you know, by the time you're through with reading all the chapters, you know, you would have, you know, just like me, you know, even you, and I hope all the readers would have obtained a lot of wisdom. I mean, there is just so much to learn. And the beauty of embracing lifelong learning is that the more we learn, the more intellectual curiosity we cultivate. And we just want to keep learning more and more. The more we learn, the more we learn that how much we do not know. And that's, it is such a, you know, it's just a wonderful, positive, virtuous cycle, which is in place. And it just makes every day so, so exciting. And, you know, I just look forward to every single day just to learn something new. It's so much fun. In fact, what Charlie Munger has done is one of the greatest thinkers of our time. He has actually trained his brain to think in such a way that when he learns something new, it releases the pleasure chemical of dopamine in his brain. So that is the way he has, you know, just trained his mind to think in such a manner. He derives a lot of pleasure from learning things. And once you have that kind of a mindset, life just becomes so wonderful and so exciting. I mean, some people get you know, excitement from bungee jumping or other thrilling adventure. People like me get thrill and excitement from discovering something new and learning something new. So I guess just let's do whatever makes us very happy.
I think it's interesting that you make the connection between happiness and this curiosity for learning. I could say that I've experienced sometimes where, you know, there's people they kind of do the opposite, where they only want to validate what they already know, and they kind of push away information that doesn't already fit into their box, and mm-hmm. they're kind of miserable doing that at the same time, if you think about it, right?
That's very true. I mean, and just to take this to the world of investing, you know, the good investors do not try to prove themselves right all the time. They in fact keep reevaluating why they might be wrong.
Right.
They are always on the search for disconfirming evidence. In fact, Charlie Munger says that any year in which you have not killed your highest conviction idea is a wasted year. I mean, that is such a brilliant trick to learn. And in the book, I've shared the story about Charles Darwin. You know, even in his evolution, you know, during this building up of his evolution theory, you know, all the time he was, you know, just building up and, you know, looking for disconfirming evidence. And whenever he used to find something which did not confirm with his preconceived notions, he used to immediately note it down, because he mentioned that the mind has got a habit of, you know, just brushing aside all the disconfirming evidence. So he actually used to note it down. So all these, you know, small tips and tricks which we can pick up from the great minds is very, very helpful. That's why, you know,
it's okay. So what would you say for someone, because you're dropping a lot of wisdom here, so I just don't want to step over everything and go one thing at a time. So for someone, you know, it sounds like you're someone who's is pretty natural at thinking in this way, you know, and I think to be compassionate to the rest of humanity, there's a lot of people that have a hard time thinking in that way. What would you say are some ways you can train your mind to, you know, to how do I put it? To start being able to, you know, break your own conclusions, think outside of your own, you know, circle of understanding, so you can expand your knowledge base. I think people generally want to say they're open-minded, and then on the flip side, so many people have a really hard time taking in new information that doesn't, you know, already confirm what they already know. How would you say you could train someone to kind of break that habit of pushing away information outside of their comfort zone?
Well, that's a very good question, Eric. And the simple answer to that is you have to embrace everlasting humility. That is the only single way you can actually embrace this way of thinking, because it's a very unnatural way of thinking. Humans basically have this habit of, you know, trying to preserve our preconceived view of ourselves. We always try to, you know, we do not see things the way they are. We see things the way we are. That's the problem. So, you know, if you really want to see things in an objective light, if you want to, you know, become a wise person, you just have to embrace humility. And, you know, that is the, you know, most effective way to inculcate this particular thought process. And it's a journey. See, a journey of a, you know, a long journey begins with one single step. And, you know, in the book, I've talked about the, you know, big idea of Kaizen, which is basically a Japanese form for taking, you know, small incremental positive steps.
So what's that word? Say that again.
It is called Kaizen, K-A-I-Z-E-N, Kaizen. So, you know, Robert Maurer's book, One Small Step Can Change Your Life. It is one of my all-time favorite books. And it talks about the power of compounding small daily positive actions. And if you want to improve, you know, you just have to begin. I mean, see, in the chapter on achieving financial independence, I talk about this particular fact that it's not the first $1 million that is the hardest. It is the first dollar. The most difficult part is getting started. That is the key. You know, you just start. Just, you know, dogged incremental progress over a long period of time is the key to compounding. That is what leads to incredible outsized results over time. I mean, I am a living example. In the first chapter, in fact, I've shown a compounding chart and I've talked about it. You know, this is what my life experienced last year. You know, after so many years of determined efforts, after, you know, repeatedly falling and getting back again, just putting in the effort every single day, just putting in the work, you know, just, you know, there is this big idea of Karma Yoga from the great Indian literature work called Bhagavad Gita. And it basically talks about, you know, just being detached from the fruits of the outcome, just focusing on the process and the work, just put in the work. You know, don't be, you know, basically we should be passionate about things that we can control, not about the outcome, because that is not in our control. If we start becoming passionate about the outcome, for example, in investing, if we start obsessing over the outcome or the returns, we risk becoming dejected on poor outcomes. But if we are passionate about the process, about, you know, the entire, you know, way of doing it, that will lead to lasting happiness. You know, we should not just, you know, obsess about the outcome or the results. You know, we have to be passionate about what we can control, and the process is the only thing within our control. And once you start living in the present and enjoying the process, because that is where you live, and so just that is how you derive lasting happiness, and that will, you know, just make, that is what will help you put in that extra effort, that is what will help you get ahead of others. You know, because, you know, how many people, you know, who would, you know, actually stay up late nights, or, you know, actually, you know, reading annual reports till 2, 3 a.m. in the morning, you know, on certain days, because they're finding it so exciting. You can only do this when you're so passionate about what you're doing and you're having a lot of fun. So It's all a combination of things. There is power in passion, I tell you. There is a tremendous amount of power in passion. And it's very good for health as well, by the way.
it's almost like if Gandhi got reincarnated into you and became a value investor. You really are like this wise Indian value investing sage.
Well, just to let you know, coincidentally, the Joys of Compounding concludes with a legendary quote by Mahatma Gandhi, who had once described compounding in all its glory. I hope readers enjoy reading that quote. It's one of my all-time favorites.
What's the quote?
Well, I cannot recall it off the top of my head, but just hold on for a second. I think I can quickly look it up for you. Just give me a second.
Well, when I get people sneak previews of books, we go to the ending first, right?
Yep. Actually, let's keep it a surprise for the readers.
Okay, perfect.
Let them read the book, actually.
Perfect.
I have it in front of me, but okay. Let them read it. I think they'll enjoy it.
Now, are there other any... So I think it's fascinating that you bring up the Bhagavad Gita. It's such a famous spiritual book for good reason, too. It's actually an incredible text. I highly recommend anyone read it. And it's also, I have found, just on a side note, it's one of the few texts where if you really spend time reading it, it's a real experience. It's not just an intellectual understanding. I mean, to really get that book, it needs to be gotten internally as opposed to just intellectually. You know what I mean?
Yep.
What would you say are some more connections that you've made between the Bhagavad Gita and value investing?
So there's a chapter in the book which talks about the virtues of philanthropy and good karma. And one of the most important teachings which I took away from the Bhagavad Gita is to develop a trusteeship attitude towards material wealth. This keeps us humble and inculcates a sense of detachment in us. The process of creating wealth should motivate us to give our best, but the results should be surrendered for the betterment of humanity after we have taken care of our needs. Because we are able to create wealth only with the help of others, right? So giving back also needs to be a part of our planning. This is how that particular chapter begins. And there are more references to the Bhagavad Gita in the book. For example, I've quoted Ajay Piramal, one of the leading industrialists from India, who basically talks about his big takeaway from the Bhagavad Gita, which is to be dispassionate. He says that, my biggest learning is that if you are dispassionate and objective, you will win. So... And he has demonstrated that through his actions. I think actions speak much more louder than words. And as investors, we want to, ultimately, our investments should also be a reflection of our personal values as well. So, we just, it's not always about returns all the time. I mean, when you're, investing, over time it becomes highly personal. And especially after you achieve financial independence, you just want to side and, partner with promoters and entrepreneurs who just share a similar philosophy like you. So it just makes life much more enjoyable. Partnering with people whom you admire and trust, it just makes life very happy and peaceful. And I think having achieved financial independence, now I have the luxury and the freedom to actually choose those kind of investments and just peacefully compound.
Can you give me an example of an investment that you've chosen in that context?
Yes, I just mentioned Ajay Piramal for example right now. He's a person who basically exercises complete detachment. I mean, many years back he sold his core, crown jewel business of domestic formulations to Abbott for a very expensive valuation. And even though that business was built up by him from scratch over the years, and he had a lot of personal attachment to it, in the interest of the minority shareholders, he actually did what was best for them. He didn't just latch on to his personal legacy. He actually did what was good and in the best interest of the minority shareholders. And he got a very rich valuation. He got, and he then deployed the proceeds into very high growth financial services business and created more value for shareholders. So, those kind of businesses are very, 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 very attractive. And there are many more. For example, there is an... animal healthcare business also in India, which I own, and they are solving a very important problem of all this animal healthcare, and basically people, you know, companies like them, like these, which are, you know, giving a good service for society and, you know, for overall development of the world, you just feel good when you're partnering with them for the long term. It just feels good. So I personally feel that, you know, when you are partnering with ethical promoters who are serving a good cause, you know, your stress adjusted returns. I mean, see, many people talk about absolute returns, right? But over time, you know, as you grow older and become more mature, you realize that stress adjusted returns are much, much more important. I mean, how do you, you know, these are highest in case of businesses, you know, which are, you know, basically playing positive sum games, you know, doing good things for society, solving a critical problem, ethical promoters, giving good dividends, you know, generating good cash flow, low debt, you know, just good. You're just basically partnering with good people and your stress adjusted returns are far, far higher. And I think sleeping well is, you know, equally, if not more important than eating well. So personally, that is my preference. Obviously, individual investors have got their own preferences. But for me, at this stage of my life, you know, having worked very, very hard to achieve financial independence, for me now, stress adjusted returns are the primary focus.
How would you, you know, because there's a lot of people who listen to the show, you know, who are just starting out in their career or possibly even, you know, still in school. What would you say to those people who are just starting out who, you know, don't have much of a reputation yet, really haven't been able to break into the industry yet? What do you tell those people who are just starting out, who want to build a career and, you know, one day get back to society? How do you break in?
It's very good. It's a very good question. So basically, the first key thing is to get started and start off, you know, with reading as much as you can. You know, just even if you can just take small baby steps, if you can just begin reading and learning, that's a very good start, number one. And apart from that, you know, then read all the great, you know, all the great texts of investing, learn from the great investors, how they behaved, what mistakes they made, what were their big successes. Basically, learn about all the extreme success and failure patterns. I mean, that is, you know, how you, you know, really, really become wiser over time. And as with any, you know, any investing endeavor, always remember the three key principles of investing, which was taught by Benjamin Graham long back in The Intelligent Investor, which is, number one, consider stocks as part ownership in a real business. Whether you buy one share, 10 shares, 100 shares, or the entire company, it's no different. You're basically buying a piece of a business. That's number one. Number two, treat market fluctuations as your friend. You know, don't be scared about, you know, downside volatility. If at all, you know, if something good becomes cheaper, then you should add more. Inculcate the habit of savings. This is very important. If you just keep saving every month, whatever little you can save, over time, dollar cost averaging works wonders. So make use of Mr. Market's mood swings, because he sometimes acts very irrational and very emotional, and stock prices become very, very attractive. And this happens almost every single year. In fact, in the book, you know, I've actually shown that this does not apply only to small cap and mid cap or micro cap stocks. Even the largest mega cap stocks of the world, you know, sometimes fluctuate between 40% and 50% between their 52-week highs and 52-week lows. So Mr. Market's mood swings affects all areas of the market. You just simply note down, you know, your favorite companies and businesses with having very attractive economic characteristics and just patiently wait. I mean, investing is a field in which less is more. Trust me, this is one of my biggest learnings over the last 10 years. This is a field in which success flows from just passively observing the world and reading, learning, thinking, and doing nothing more than making the occasional telephone call to your broker for executing the transaction. That's it. There's nothing else to it. This is like, you know, watching paint dry or watching grass grow. That is what value investing is. You just need to be patient. That's it.
And what advice would you give someone? So let's say that, you know, they start learning those habits, getting into that mindset, and now they want to, you know, do this as a full-time career. In the job searching process to, you know, start managing capital, what advice would you give someone?
Persistence. Let me share my own story. So this will be, I hope this inspires a lot of young people. So when I came to America, you know, 4.5 years back, that time, you know, I lacked any formal, I had zero formal stock market experience, number one. I had worked for almost 7 years in Deutsche Bank and Citigroup as an investment banking senior analyst, but I had zero formal stock market experience, okay? When I came to America, I gave 3 stock market job interviews in the first 6 months. I got rejected in all 3 of them, failed miserably, could not convert even a single one of those stock market job interviews. Okay. But like I said in the beginning, there is power in passion, and passion is what leads to persistence. I mean, over the next 15 months, you know, what I did was to sustain myself in America. And I did not want to sell any single stock from my portfolio of Indian stocks because I did not want to disturb the process of compounding. So to sustain myself in America, I actually took up a minimum wage job as a front desk clerk at a hotel in San Francisco. And I used to work during the graveyard shift, 11 p.m. at night to 7 a.m. in the morning. And during that phase of 15 months, that is when my learning curve really took off, because At those late nights, early mornings, the workflow used to be very, very, very slow, and I used to get a lot of free time to read and learn. In that span, I read every single blog article on Fundu Professor, Microcap Club, Safal Niveshak, Jana WordPress blog. I read every single blog and I used to take notes. And alongside that, every single day, every single night, I used to average around 3 job applications. I used to fill up 3 stock market job applications online every single day. So if you do the math, over those 15 months, I still distinctly remember, I must have applied to more than 1,300 jobs. I'm not kidding you. Wow. At least 1,300 jobs. Okay. And Eric, behind every single job application, there is so much hope attached. There is so much emotion attached. And to face 1,300 rejections and still keep on going, I mean, that just requires, tremendous amount of resilience and persistence. I mean, I personally feel resilience is a superpower. And, if you really persist, anything is possible. Anything in life is possible if you really persist. And, one particular fine night in November 2016, I just came across this job application on LinkedIn, and I just clicked on the quick apply button, and lo and behold, I got called for this interview, that too for a senior role as a portfolio manager in this investment firm, which I work for right now. And the very next month, I traveled to Salt Lake City from San Francisco for my interview. I had 3 rounds of interview. And I guess they just were very impressed by my passion and dedication towards this profession and craft. And I was just very lucky. Although I will humbly acknowledge that I was never expecting to become a portfolio manager so early. I was expecting to reach this designation after 10, 12 years. But I mean, I just consider myself very lucky, and passion just works wonders. And
it's all, so far, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yes, and I'm just, whenever I look back at those times, at those difficult times, I just feel a bit emotional. But because, Eric, what happens is during that particular phase, when you're living life according to the inner scorecard, and when you're just working very hard every single day towards what you believe so strongly in, I mean, there'll be so many critics. I mean, the easiest thing in the world to do is to become a critic.
I was just going to ask you, did your friends and family think you were kind of crazy, or did they get it?
All right, we have you back on. We had a little bit of a connection issue, but not a big deal. So I was asking if your friends and family thought you were a little crazy, 15 months and you're applying to all these jobs, and you've only been in the United States for 4 years. And, what did people think? Did you have a lot of critics? Did people just not get it? Or, tell me about that.
I don't blame them. I mean, it's very, difficult to empathize with others in different situations, and especially because I'd come to America without a job in hand. As it is, many friends and family members were very critical of that decision. And on top of that, if they had gotten to know that I was working in a minimum wage job in America and refusing all these lucrative 6-figure salary job interviews, which I was getting for investment banking, then they would have simply thought that I've lost my marbles, because this is what defines truly passionate people. I mean, we just, we are the round pegs in the square hole, like Steve Jobs used to say, and people just cannot appreciate, our mindset. But I was very firmly disciplined in my job search and very focused what I wanted to achieve. And thankfully, in the end, things cleared out pretty well. And I'm very thankful for all that happened. I mean, during those tough times and difficult times is when you get to know who you are, what you are, and you get to learn a lot of good lessons in life. So I'm very thankful for those difficult times, and I'm all the more wiser for it. So I'm very happy.
You were talking earlier where you said resilience is like a superpower. And I make the connection between your resilience and your passion, and then what we were talking about earlier with this principle of detachment, right? And just focusing on the process versus trying to chase an outcome. And I think you've I think you've lived that, really.
Yep. I just put in the work every single day. Just fill up the forms as per the standard procedure. Just put in the work, put in the effort, put in the time. I mean, filling up those forms was very tedious and time-consuming, but it was just work that had to be done. I mean, in order for serendipity and, you know, to enter your life, you have to, you know, create, you know, you have to create the opportunity, right? For that, the starting step is to put in the work. After that, you know, let the outcome take care of itself. The key is, you know, there is no downside, right? What was the downside here? There was no downside. There was only potential upside. But many people just, you know, don't even want to try. And it just surprises me. I mean, in the worst case scenario, you will be where you are right now, the status quo. And in the best case scenario, you will be reaching your dream. It is such a, I mean, this is value investing, actually, you know, misplaced gamble. Right. This is a misplaced situation.
It's just only upside, no downside. It's amazing how tough it is, though, for people to think like this, you know? Like, this, you know, this conversation comes easy to me, but the truth is, and I think you understand this, probably to the majority of people just doing their daily thing on the planet, this is not a normal conversation that we're having. You know, this is not a normal way of living life. People are like, so focused, right? People are so focused.
All that I can tell you is, it's a very fulfilling and happy way to live life. Trust
me.
I mean, when you find your North Star, that is the guiding force of your life. Let it guide you, and that is, you know, once you know what matters the most to you in life, and you work towards it every single day, that is such a good feeling, Eric. I tell you, it is such a good feeling. You're always, you know, just, you know, you can't at night when you sleep, you can't wait to wake up the next day and get to do what you love and love what you do. I mean, that is such a wonderful feeling to have. Trust me, it just makes all the difference. I worked for 7 years in a job which I did not like, and now that every day I'm getting to do what I love to do, which is, you know, to read, learn and think, and, you know, analyze businesses, industries and companies, it's just so much fun. I mean, life is just fun. And why this is so important is that our work fills up a large percentage of our, you know, waking hours, right? So to find fulfilling work is so important. So important. But if you want to reach that particular stage, you have to work towards it. I worked towards it for, you know, 15 months, and the 6 months before that, it took me 2 years, but fine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very inspiring story. And you know, I knew I was going to enjoy this conversation with you when we were talking before the show. And I asked you, and I said, you know, are there any things you'd like me to bring up or things you'd like me to ask you? And you said, no, we'll just, you know, kind of go with it and have a free flowing conversation. And, you know, on this podcast, that's what I like to do regardless. And it's interesting that I'm usually the one that is like, hey, you know, it doesn't have to be some formal interview. We'll just have a free, you know, we'll just roll with it and have a free form conversation, and whatever comes out of it is what comes out of it. And we'll just enjoy the conversation. And the fact that you were the one bringing it up, hey, no, it's okay. Just, let's just have a good conversation. I was like, okay, I'm going to like this guy.
I think I'm at my best when I'm very spontaneous. That's the way I am. Yeah. I just like to, you know, just be very open and frank and just be absolutely open and honest. I mean, there is nothing to hide.
You know, it's funny talking about process too, right? It's like you know, I've never shared this on this podcast before, but the reason I started this podcast is I was kind of bored with a lot of the business. You know, there's not a lot of business podcasts to begin with. And, you know, most of them I find kind of boring. And there's a lot of, you know, there's some great ones too, but a lot of them are really boring. And it's like, you know, I could have had you on and be like, we're going to have a, you know, and I give you all the credentials, you know, and I introduce you, and then it comes like this weird formal interview, and it's all mechanic and robotic. Oh, so interesting. Tell me more. It's very weird. And I think that sometimes, especially in the business world, people are so afraid to just authentically express themselves that it becomes this like businessy conversation, right? Where it's literally the epitome of being so focused on an outcome, where in this case it's a business conversation outcome, that people kind of get robotic. And it's interesting that if you meet a lot of these really amazing investors, one of the things that I feel unites a lot of them, you know, you bring up guys like, you know, Buffett and Munger, and then you also bring up guys, you know, for instance, you bring up Marcelo Lima, who's been on this podcast before and a friend of mine. And
just really down-to-earth guys, and the one thing they all have in common is they're focused on process and not on outcome, and it's a different kind of energy that those people have, including you.
Yep. Speaking of Marcelo Lima, just yesterday I watched his Investor Day presentation where he talked about exponential organizations like the new age businesses like Google, Amazon, and Facebook, and how standard conventional valuation measures do not really capture the S-curve growth paths which these businesses are taking. And it was very, very insightful. Yeah. And just to add to your point about, this authenticity, one of my all-time favorite quotes, which I've shared in the book as well, is from one of my role models, Guy Spier. In his book, The Education of a Value Investor, he wrote that the true path to success is true authenticity. And that is such a wonderful, wonderful line. I just love that quote. And that is, that says so much. I mean, in the book, there is a chapter I've dedicated to him. It's titled The Education of a Value Investor, in which I've freely and openly shared all my major investing mistakes. And then I've, examined each of them through the lens of behavioral science. And, some of my friends, during the book writing process, they were like, why do you want to disclose all your mistakes? You'll come across as a bad investor, this, that. So I simply used to tell them that, we should not just, follow our role models in many words. We should embody them in words, action, and spirit. And, if Guy Spier was, so open in, acknowledging his vulnerabilities and all his mistakes in his book, and, he's always been so open and humble, I should emulate the same and do the same. I mean, vicarious learning is one of the best forms of learning. I've been through so many financial and emotional pain. I don't want other people to go through it. That was the reason why I shared all my mistakes so, so openly in the book. And, I really, respect my mistakes because they made me so much more wiser over the years. The kind of experience and wisdom which they have given me is priceless. But I wish, I had embraced vicarious learning earlier, then I would have probably sidestepped many of those mistakes, but it's fine.
Yeah, well, it's like Charlie Munger says that he likes to learn from dead people.
True.
And read biographies of the dead, like Ben Franklin is an example.
Oh, yes. Benjamin Franklin is also one of my role models. So in the book also, there's extensive references to him in many chapters.
Let's talk a little bit about him. How do you feel some of what he shares and some of the Ben Franklin wisdom applies to value investing?
Very much. So basically in the chapter on achieving financial independence, for example, there's one quote by Benjamin Franklin, which basically says that beware of small expenses, for a small leak can sink a big boat, a big ship. And during my wealth accumulation and savings phase, I used to just try to save every single dime that I could during that endeavor. I mean, that was the key to compounding, just to save as much as I could, work as hard as I could. And two words, basically, Benjamin Franklin talks about a lot. He used to talk about these two concepts a lot: industry, which is hard work, and frugality. So basically, these two big ideas I just took to heart and I just applied them in my life. And lo and behold, I just achieved financial independence. And it's really fascinating. There's so much to learn from him. So much. I mean, he used to basically embody so many good worldly, good life principles. It was very, very inspiring. Very, very inspiring. About, certain daily rituals, and just performing them with full integrity, believing in we the people, having a community feeling, industry and frugality, and a lot of good attributes to live a good life, and gotten to learn a lot from him. I think, the biggest thing in this book, which I've tried to bring out, is that value investing is not just about stocks and business fundamentals. For the truly passionate value investors, the seasoned ones and the experienced ones, you'll observe that they treat it like a life discipline. It's a way of living one's life.
I was going to say, there's a spirituality to the value investing community. It's an experience that impacts you at the level of spirit.
Yep.
And I think that I don't even want to explain it, but I think just from our conversation, it speaks to that essence. And have you been to a Berkshire Hathaway meeting?
Yes, I've been going there for the last 3 years.
Okay.
And awesome. I'm also very happy to inform, you know, you and your podcast listeners that I've been selected as one of the featured authors at the Berkshire Hathaway book signing event, which will be held in Creighton University in Omaha on the 3rd of May, just one day prior to the Berkshire annual meeting.
Well, that's amazing. So, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I you know, it's so funny when people who have never been to the Berkshire Hathaway meeting, it's kind of hard to explain why they should come. And I think just this conversation right here speaks to that essence that there's this spiritual groundedness. There's a there's a kind of philosophy that's just embedded in the fabric of that culture. And when you go there, it regrounds you, and it you can see all the places where maybe you've swayed a little bit the past year, and you're around a community that really keeps you grounded. I mean, I can tell you personally, out of any community in my life, the value investing community has been by far the most beneficial to me in my life. And, you know, you talk about concepts like the inner scorecard and focusing on process. And I think it's one thing to, you know, read a book about it. And you know, obviously you wrote a book about it, but it's a whole other thing when you can be grounded in that, in a community of, you know, actual people.
That's very true. In fact, you know, I've talked about you know, this in the chapter on the importance of having the right associates in life. So, Sanjan, just to add to your point about the impact which a Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting has on us value investors, I'll just sum it up in one single line. You get to experience a gravitational pull towards higher qualities. I mean, you know, Warren Buffett has famously said, hang out and interact with people better than you and you cannot improve. And that is what you get to experience every year at the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting. I mean, so many, you know, smart, intelligent, wise people. Just being in their presence has an incredible impact on, you know, the truly curious and humble person. I mean, you just want to imbibe all those good qualities as much as you can. You know, just take up all the good qualities that you can from all those wise people. That's what I love most about this annual meeting. Yeah. And you'll also notice one more thing. Most of those, in fact, majority, if not all of them, are so, so humble and so, so helpful. I mean, you know, they have been greatly beneficial in my life. Greatly, greatly beneficial. And those relationships, you know, they really tend to endure for a long period of time. And it's not about money. It's just about, you know, being in the company of good people. That's it.
You know, so I'm a little mind blown right now just because, so I've been going this will be my 14th year in a row going. And what you just said explains more eloquently than I've ever explained it to anyone why they should come to a Berkshire Hathaway meeting, to the point where if someone's like, hey, you know, that thing in Omaha you go to, and I know you've wanted me to come, why do you think I should come? I'm just going to play them that little clip of the podcast because it's so beautiful what you just said. Thank you for saying that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wow, this is you're a fascinating individual. Is there anything else that you think you know, big takeaways from your book? Any other principles that you'd like to discuss?
I think I'll just leave that for the readers to, you know, enjoy when they read it, but. The key message for the readers would be, you know, just you know, share all your learnings with your friends and colleagues, and just help other people rise in life as much as possible. I think that is the way goodwill compounds over time, and you know, that is something which no one can take away from you. You know, a good reputation, goodwill, you know, respect, trust, admiration, these need to be earned, and the only way to do that is through your actions. Just be a good human being and just help other people rise in life. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, once you've done well for yourself, then do devote some time to helping other people as well. That's my only message.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on, and you know, to the listeners, I have to say your book was fantastic. I had the opportunity to read it this weekend. Your book is now available for pre-order on Amazon. When's the official release date of your book?
So it's next Thursday. It is 25th of April.
25th of April. And they can pre-order it on Amazon right now. Is that correct?
Yes. And for USA-based readers, they can pre-order it on Barnes & Noble,
okay.
Books A Million, and IndieBound, because right now Amazon USA stopped the pre-orders for the moment.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. So what I'll do from you is I'll if you could email me maybe some links, and I could put that in the show notes for people if they want to order your book.
I'll do that, Eric. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It was a real pleasure talking to you.
Same here, Eric. Thank you so much.
And I hope to meet you in Omaha this year.
Absolutely. We'll definitely catch up.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much, and have a great rest of your evening.
Thank you, Eric.
All right, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.